when we communicate, what are we really communicating about? What is the content of communication? Because you see, McLuhan has come up with a very strange idea that the medium itself is the message. Or putting it in a punny way to make it clearer, the medium is the massage. Not so much, therefore, finally, the content of what is being said is the thing you're getting over, but what you're getting over is the way of saying it. So we have to go into what it is, finally, that we are communicating about when we communicate. What do we want to tell our friends, our other people, our other selves? Now, I had a great deal of trouble really sympathizing with McLuhan's point of view, especially in what he has to say about television, where he feels that the medium of television is highly participative and that the mosaic technique of bringing the image across onto the television screen is something entirely different, say, from a film or from a painting. He expresses the notion that television is more tactile than visual. And therefore it involves you, as the sense of touch involves you. You see, because touch is the fundamental sense. All the five senses are specializations of the sense of touch. So when you see, you're touching light. When you hear, you're touching air. And when you taste and smell, especially in smell, you're touching gas. The quality of gas. And finally, with your fingers, you have, in a way, the most primitive sense, the sense that is least acute in its differentiations. But nevertheless, you see, all of them are forms of touch. And so you could say, as the Buddhists say, there is one sense behind all our senses. They have a sixth sense. For example, they use the word vijnana, which means consciousness. And they have nose consciousness, eye consciousness, ear consciousness, touch consciousness, taste consciousness. Five. But behind that, they have manovijnana, which means mind consciousness. That is to say, the unifying of the senses, so that you will put together the sight of fish and the smell of fish, and be able to integrate them and say, well, this is a single experience. The fish looks so and smells so, touches so. And so by the integration of the senses, all being forms of touch, you can, of course, eventually come to a state of consciousness where you can hear colors and see sounds, if you're very, very sensitive indeed. So, you might say now then that all communication is information. But I want to show you that straight information is not the final thing we're trying to communicate. You see, we live now in a culture where there is great disagreement about the values of life. What do we live for? There is no consensus, because all the religions, which were the philosophies which gave us what life is supposed to be all about, they're all fragmented. And so there is, being no common religion, there is no common view as to what life is about. In default of that common view, there is, especially in the academic world where people think out ethical and political problems, a tacit agreement that the highest value we have, that we can all agree upon, is survival value. And therefore, naturally, when we communicate messages which have to do with survival, i.e., where to find the food, where to avoid the enemy, then One says we are communicating about essentials. During the war, World War II, a friend of mine was in the office of the president of Northwestern University, and he had a number of watercolors around his office. And he said to this friend of mine, "Well, now we're at war," waving his hand at the paintings, "all this is irrelevant. We come down to essentials. Is this trip really necessary? Is this trip really necessary?" In other words, what do you mean when you say, "Is this trip really necessary?" When you say essentials, priority is given to essential industries in war. They are the industries of survival. Because we got it into our common sense, even though we may not have intended to do this, but it is fundamentally established in our common sense that survival is the thing that is good. While there is life, there is hope. And this, of course, is a really asinine point of view. Because it is not survival, just going on, that we want. Yes, we want survival, but survival in a certain way, that is to say, in a certain style. And you will therefore see that in the end, while there is always a survival content in communication, so far as that communication is information, what is finally more valued about communication than the survival value information is the style in which it's given. It's just in the same way as lovemaking. Finally, when it comes down to it, what do you want to say to the person? "I love you." What are you going to communicate? An engineer would say, when you say "I love you," it means that we're going to do reproduction and therefore continue the race. But that's not the point at all. It's obvious that it's not. What are children for? Just to continue? No, they're to be loved. And how do you love things? You stroke them. You give them a massage. If it moves, fondle it. And so it is, finally, what you're communicating to someone you love is a rhythm. Whether it's the rhythm of sexual intercourse, or whether it's the rhythm of dancing, or whether it's the rhythm of verbal play, as in telling a story or in singing a song, what you're communicating is a sort of caressing rhythm which says to you, "I'm so glad you're here, and that you can receive my communication," which is about nothing, only to say, "In this way of a dancing with you, I love you." That's really what it's all about. So then, you see, the Buddhists call that factor of communication suchness. For example, when we talk, you understand my words because each word that I use has a meaning. And so the words that I use refer to something other than themselves. So I use these symbols, and you get what I'm talking about. Now listen carefully. What does that mean? That I communicate meaning to you by words is a situation. Now what's the meaning of that situation? And you meditate a little bit on that, and you discover that it has no meaning at all. A cloud has no meaning because it isn't a symbol. It's what we call a thing. The word cloud, the sound, cloud, means that. But what does that mean? You see, it's not a word. So it doesn't mean anything. A cloud is jazz. It's the part of the dance of the universe. And so, likewise, when I make sense to you and you say make sense to me, we have a kind of interlocking that would correspond, perhaps, to a spider's web, where various rings of thread are joined to rings of thread inside rings of thread. It's joined together. So we join together by talking, see? We play together by talking. But what that all means is some kind of jazz. And that's suchness. In the practice of meditation, the most important thing is to get down to suchness in everything that goes on. A great Japanese Zen master, when he was about to die, wrote a poem which said, "From the bathtub to the bathtub, I have uttered stuff and nonsense." In other words, the bathtub in which the baby is washed at birth and the bathtub in which the corpse is washed before burial. Alpha to Omega, maternity ward to crematorium. "All this time," he said, "I have talked only nonsense." And this is part of the whole thing of Zen, to be able to hear all voices, all communications, all gestures, all shapes, all sensations whatsoever, in their fundamental form as lulling. When a baby starts to talk in the beginning, it speaks what Jacob Bremer called the natural language. And he says that man at his fall, talking about the fall of Adam, lost the natural language. And the natural language is understood by birds and beasts, because they speak it. Because a lot of what birds say is not communicative in our ordinary sense of delivering information. Some of it delivers information, but a great deal of what they say doesn't deliver any communication. It is just playing with sound. And a great deal of what we do is playing with sound. I'm particularly aware of this as a philosopher, because a lot of people will be very critical of what I say and say, "You don't really make any sense at all. You sound as if you do. And you beguile and hoodwink the public into thinking that you have got something important to say, and all you're doing is making noises." And I say, granted, that's absolutely true. But if I make interesting noises and manage to make a play of ideas that is in some way musical, see, fascinating, people say, well, it's the same sort of thing that we enjoy out of looking at a mountain, or watching waves, or the flight of birds, because it is this dance.